said, even though I was late, I have to be done by 2:30, so I only have about 3 minutes. it's kind of easy, as long as I keep up my Bible study habit with the girls, to come up with lesson material. Because oftentimes what you get is what something that we've read this past week. And so we're going to talk a little bit about a familiar story to us all, Ahab and Naboth. We're going to talk a little bit more than just this account, but there were quite a few things in here that kind of jumped out at me when I had read this again. And so in 1 Kings, the 16th chapter, we find Ahab becomes the king of Israel. That's where it's recorded. And it's interesting, it's as you read through Kings, and it's something that I've noticed, and I'm sure I've read this before, but it seems as if, or at least, you know, when I read through it, each king seems to just get worse and worse, because for several kings in a row in Israel and Judah, the kingdom is divided at this point. But it seems like everyone is, there's a little clause that says that, and he did more evil than all others before him combined. And it says that about Ahab, who certainly was a very, very vile person. But in this particular instance, Ahab, in chapter 21, Ahab notices a vineyard really close to his palace, in a place called Jezreel. Now, evidently that was a place that was near or right by Samaria. And so Ahab found out who the owner of this vineyard was, a man named Naboth, and he proposed a deal to him. And, you know, as you're reading it, you know, there doesn't seem to be anything, I guess, bad about the deal for at a glance, you know, if you don't really know a whole lot about Hebrew culture or the law. Ahab proposes what seems to be a very fair deal. He says that, you know, I like your vineyard, I want to use it for my own gardens. I can pay you whatever price you want. You name the price, I will pay it. Or I'll give you a better vineyard somewhere else. Naboth didn't want to say it was something that was not for sale. Deuteronomy 19:14 issues a command to not move your neighbor's landmark. This vineyard had been in Naboth's family for generations, and if you think about it, it would be similar to having a family business that you have handed down for generations. Because with a vineyard, you know, the grapes of the vineyard, or, you know, whatever happened to grow, they could, you know, press them and either sell the grapes or make wine, or take the vines and, you know, put them together and make rope. It was a source, it was an asset to Naboth's family that he wanted to keep in the family, not only to be able to provide for them, but also to keep this commandment of keeping the landmark, keeping the boundaries established. So Naboth wouldn't sell it. Ahab then goes on a severe pouting spree. And he goes up and he goes and lays down on his bed, and he won't eat anything, and he just whimpers and whines and pouts, like we've all heard before. We all know what I'm talking about. And so Jezebel comes and sweet talks him. You know, what's wrong, baby? Why are you up here? Why are you crying? And so Ahab tells the story, and Jezebel takes it upon herself to challenge his authority. Is this how you rule over Israel? You mean to tell me that little peon of a man won't sell you his vineyard and you just come up here and pout. You get up. You eat something. Make yourself feel better. I'll get that vineyard for you. And so she conspires a plan to have Naboth killed, and Ahab will take the vineyard, and that's what happens. And so, obviously, this displeases the Lord very greatly. So the word of the Lord comes to Elijah, and he says, and the Lord commands Elijah, go and tell Ahab that he's got his coming to him. And so the pronouncement of this, well, before I get to that, verse 17 of 1 Kings 21 is when Elijah gets the command. And so he goes, and when he goes to him, when he goes to King Ahab, people really loved Elijah, especially the kings. The first thing he says when he gets to him, he says, "So you found me, my enemy." I mean, it's not, "Hey, how you doing? Thanks, by the way, for, you know, giving me a blessing over this most recent battle of mine," or anything like that. It's kind of funny that he says that because, I'll get to the greater point. So let me work up to it instead of kind of bouncing around. So in chapter 18. King Ahab was the one that Elijah went to go see. I like to call it the showdown at Mount Carmel, Baal versus the Lord. And if you remember correctly, there were 850 prophets combined as Baal and Asherah, who was a Canaanite goddess, who Elijah challenged. And he said, "You get all your prophets, you meet me on Mount Carmel, and we will decide final, you know, who is God. If it is Baal, worship him. If it is the Lord, worship him." And you remember the story. Two altars were built, and they were going to pray to call down fire from heaven to burn up the sacrifices on the altars that were created. As the account goes, all the prophets of Baal were screaming and hollering and cutting themselves and all this kind of stuff. Nothing happened. And Elijah basically floods his altar in praise, and fire comes down and burns everything up, licks up the water, everything. A very, very, I'm sure, visually compelling and just awesome sight to see. I mean, I can't even imagine being one of the people that were in the presence to see all that. It'd be amazing to see. And not only that, but Elijah pretty much captured all 850 of those prophets and slaughtered them. And Ahab kind of gets in his chariot and he takes off real fast, tells Jezebel all about it, and she sends a message to Elijah. And that basically is a death sentence. It's like, he said, "You will be dead by tomorrow," is essentially what she said. And so he gets scared and runs off and all this kind of stuff. But anyway, nevertheless, Elijah had made an enemy out of Ahab. And I think that it's a very interesting perspective. Good can never coexist with evil. God cannot coexist with sin. And we see that a lot from God's perspective, right? Come out from them and be separate. Do not be unequally yoked. A little leaven leavens the whole lump. Remove the sin from the camp. We see that verbiage over and over and over from God's perspective, that God can have nothing to do with sin or with evil. It's not very often that in the scriptures where we see the flip side of that, where the evil cannot coexist with good either. That's probably one of the biggest messages that I take from his greeting to Elijah, from Ahab's greeting to Elijah, you have found me my enemy. You see, the prophets, historically, were supposed to be aides to the king. They were supposed to go and, you know, proclaim victory over them before battle and, you know, let them know how to do all this. They were supposed to be trusted advisors to the king, or they acted in that way. That was not their sole purpose, but a lot of times what you found out, or what, as you see in Scripture, prophets acted as advisors to kings. And King Ahab had made it a point to make Elijah an enemy. In fact, several times the Scriptures say that, in so many words, that Ahab had devoted himself to disobey or displease the Lord. I believe there's one translation that renders it that he sold himself to do what is evil in the Lord's sight. But regardless, so he greets Elijah, and Elijah gives him, verse 21, this pronouncement against Ahab. And basically what that was is just because of, and it wasn't just, this seemed to be the straw that broke the camel's back, so to speak. But King Ahab's problems started way before Naboth and the vineyard. We won't get into all that, but verse 21 basically says that all of his male descendants are going to be eradicated, totally destroyed. His entire house will be killed off, and that the dogs will eat the flesh of Jezebel. Now, Ahab showed guilt and showed that he felt, at least in that moment, once he heard about all of that, because these were his kids, this was his family. And I'm sure that Ahab, even though he was a vile person, he was a man, he was a human, and I'm sure that he cared for and loved his family. And so when he heard all this, he knew, in the back of his mind, he knew that it would come to pass. He didn't know when, but he knew that it would come to pass, because I believe that although Ahab always devoted himself to false idols and everything, I think in the back of my mind, in the back of his mind, that Ahab always knew that the Lord was God. He had seen too much. He had witnessed too many things. He had witnessed the power of God through Elijah too many times. In fact, that battle I was talking about, and I believe it's the 19th or 20th chapter, I can't recall. But a victory over Ben-Hadad, there was a king who had assembled the armies of 32 kings, and I think it was something like over 100,000 foot soldiers. It's just an unbelievable army. The Israelites had an army of 7,000. I don't know what kind of odds those are, but this, it's not good. And Elijah told Ahab, or the Lord told Ahab through the prophet Elijah, I guess, if you want to put it that way, that I will give you over this army so that you will know that I am the Lord. There were several times that the Lord was just over and over and over and over again trying to reach Ahab somehow, some way. If the fire from heaven didn't do it, which to me, I mean, like, if there was ever any question in my mind, that would seal the deal pretty quick. But nevertheless, I believe that the scriptures use the term that the Israelites slaughtered them with a great slaughter and just decimated this army. The odds were so stacked against them that, you know, by if we're going to use our military terms, Or think about that in you know, our, if the United States sends 7,000 troops to go fight an army of 100,000, people would really start questioning the decisions coming out of the Pentagon, right? I mean, I know that our armed forces are good, but 7,000 against 100,000, that's military suicide. But yet, the Lord designed it that way because he wanted to prove to Ahab that he was the Lord. And yet, he had the audacity to call Elijah his enemy. Anyway, Ahab shows a degree of guilt after Elijah tells him all of this. And Ahab, the Lord decided to not do this during Ahab's lifetime. In fact, it was quite a bit after his lifetime when all of this judgment, this pronounced judgment, came about. And the best I could calculate, and I probably skipped something and don't have the right numbers added up, but the best I could figure is about 16 or 17 years. Best I can figure. Again, reading through the passages about the, you know, in the so-and-so, you know, the so-and-so year of so-and-so's reign, so-and-so else became king. Again, you know, all of that kind of verbiage kind of is difficult for me to come through. So if you have anyone knows a specific number of how long it's been, please let me know and show me how to figure it out. But the best I can figure is around 17 years, more than a decade. The point being, some time has passed, and Ahab is obviously dead at this point. And he actually died not too long after this, about 3 years after all of this, this judgment was pronounced. He died in battle. Regardless, so it is about 17 years after the fact. King Ahab had been dead for a while, and is in Israel. In the kingship of in Israel and Samaria had actually been through. It's now second king past Ahab. So now a man by the name of Joram was king, and then in Judah, a man named Ahaziah, who was actually the same name of the king previous to Joram, two separate people, same name, but different people. Anyway, so we have to fast forward a little bit to get to what I consider the conclusion of this story with Naboth and the vineyard of Ahab. So Ahab was dead for a while, but this pronouncement of judgment against Ahab's family has still not been carried out. And I'm sure that, after a couple of years, or, you know, even a couple of years afterwards, especially, you know, as soon as they heard the news, I mean, either one of two things happened. They just brushed it off like, Elijah, he's a crazy guy, whatever. Or they're like, there's a good chance that something might happen. But probably what I would assume is that they just kind of forgot about it. They forgot about this pronouncement of judgment that Elijah had made. And so, I can't recall if Elisha is the prophet now by the time we get to 2 Kings chapter 9, but regardless, a man by the name of Jehu, who was one of Jehoshaphat's children, who was king of Judah when Ahab was king of Israel. Jehu is appointed king, even though Joram is the current reigning king over Israel. And so the word of the Lord comes to Jehu through a prophet and says, it's time to make things right, essentially. 2 Kings the ninth chapter, we find out that Jehu goes down to Jezreel in Samaria, and basically he's going to clean house. So Jehu comes, and now Ahaziah had traveled to Joram's palace, the king's palace in Jezreel, right? You know where this vineyard was. Evidently, they'd been using it for a while. So they came there, or he was going there on a visit. While he was on the way, there were watchmen that noticed that there's some crazy driver. He drives like Jehu, because he drives like a maniac. So they evidently Jehu was a very good driver in that respect, very very noticeable. Well, anyway, so he sees these messengers that they see this. They send messengers out to see if he's coming in peace. And essentially, Jehu recruits them, recruits the people that are coming. Basically, in what is very similar to a car chase scene that we would see in a James Bond movie or something like that, Jehu kills Joram and Ahaziah, and he gets to the city gate of Jezreel, which is where Jezebel is at that particular time, and she hears about Jehu coming. And I think, in my personal opinion, I think she's going to try and seduce him in some kind of way, because she, you know, puts on makeup and all this kind of stuff, pretties herself up, so to speak. And it's very easy to see how Jezebel influenced Ahab so greatly, because she greeted Jehu a lot like Ahab greeted Elijah. And so she says to Jehu, "Do you come in peace, Zimri, killer of your master?" Now Zimri, if you recall, in I believe the 16th chapter of 1 Kings, was a man that who basically, I don't know what the correct verbiage was, but staged a coup. Something to that effect. I don't know if I'm using that word correctly. But anyway, was basically going to take the king and stole the kingship for about 7 days and killed his master and all this kind of stuff. But then people got wind of that and ran into a temple, burned it down on top of himself. Essentially, what Jezebel is saying to Jehu is, you think what you're doing, you think you can steal this kingship from us? You've got no chance. And anyway, his reply back was, he saw the eunuchs in the window, which were Jezebel's, likely her servants, and just asked the question, "Who's on my side?" And the eunuchs kind of look at each other and then toss Jezebel out the window. They said, "We're not with her, we're with this guy." And they toss her out of the window, and she falls. And I don't know if she's dead when she hits the ground, but Jehu then takes his chariot and runs over. She's dead now. So he, stops the chariot. He gets out, gets himself something to eat. And tells his men, he's like, "Okay, well, let's go take care of this dead woman." And by the time they get there, they only find the skull and the hands and feet. And then Jehu goes on to slaughter all of Ahab's house, all of his sons, and all the Baal worshippers that he can gather up. From all around, he really, really cleans house. And that's kind of how I see where this story of Ahab ends, is when this prophecy that Elijah spoke against Ahab is finally fulfilled through Jehu. And so all of that to say, really two things that I take from this story more than anything is, number one, how evil cannot coexist with good. We see that demonstrated over and over again. And number two, the Lord is not slack concerning his promise. It may take, you know, the Lord's time is a whole lot different than our time. And especially when it comes to vengeance, the Lord will hold up his end of the bargain. Because when Jesus Christ comes back, he will come back in a flaming fire, taking vengeance on those that don't know him. And we may not know when that will be. We don't know. Right? And we will never know when that is. And I'm sure there are people now that mock us who are waiting for the Lord's return. But the Lord is not slack concerning his promise. The people of Ahab's house were no doubt have forgotten all about the prophecy. And we may forget about the word of the Lord, but the Lord does not. That is one thing for sure that we can be, we can take that to the bank, as they say. So I hope that something that we have said this afternoon has been some kind of benefit to you. I apologize, it was a little bit long in 3 minutes. But we offer this time for anyone who would like to obey the gospel and make some kind of wrong right. So please do so as we stand as we sing.